You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome. Thank you for listening. This is episode 209 of the IT in the D Show.
It's a hashtag punch a Nazi episode.
And is although
we thought we could get political on this show. Come on,
that wasn't political.
We'll be talking. That's not.
Oh, you know, you wait till I get political.
We're going to be talking about the crazy stuff going on in the world, and we also have two great guests: resident cybersecurity guru expert Kasten Thomas is here talking about no ransomware.
Howdy, howdy.
Should be a great conversation. Thank you. And also, we got Brian Krantz in here. He's the IT director of the MEDC. It's Michigan Economic Development Corp.
Pure Michigan.
Talking about the job market in Michigan, and talking about the program we're launching with IT and the D. Career Academy.
Well, exactly. We're expanding. It's been launched.
It's been Flint. That was a trial. Now we're actually launching proper.
Exactly.
And we'll be talking about
where
that.
Where it belongs.
Exactly.
Yes.
Dave, you may fire and ready.
You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Following program is intended for mature audiences.
I'm Wyatt. That's Gary. You're Bob and you're Dave. This is the IT and the D Show.
This is Max Headroom. And what you're about to witness is one of the most sinister sounding intros to a trailer to one of the greatest epics ever.
This is Billy D. Williams. Bob and Dave and I are enjoying a Colt 45 right now. And remember, IT in the D, it works every time.
Where do you guys think you are?
The Library of Congress?
Detroit?
Beyond the Sun?
Any of those, right?
Take him to Detroit.
No! No, not Detroit! No! No, please! Anything but that! No!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Then don't come! Shut up!
Hi, this is Christy Swanson, and you're listening to the IT in the D Show. And Bob and Dave touch my hoo-hoos.
So what happens when you tap the angry beaver in the bunghole?
Exactly.
Come on.
The prize.
To hell with this. I'm calling a break. We'll come back to the D Show.
This is Guilfoyle from Silicon Valley, and the only two guys I hate more than Dinesh are Bob and Dave. Suck it, guys.
What's up, everybody? This is Billy Zapka. Sweep the leg. Listening to IT and the D Show. No mercy.
I may have to wipe the geek off.
Hi, this is Kelly LeBrock from Weird Science. So, Bob and Dave, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
Are we at a break yet?
Hey, this is Zach McGowan from Planet Earth. You're listening to IT and the D Show.
Hi, I'm Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to IT and the D. All you nerds out there.
Nerds.
What is a nerd?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
Hey, Detroit, this is Anthony Michael Hall. You're listening to my buddies Bob and Dave on IT in the D.
This is Scott Steiner, Big Pump and Pump. The IT in the D Show is your hookup. Holler if you hear me.
You're in your underwear, I'm in my underwear. Hey, let's hang out.
No, I'm sorry, honey. I have a headache.
I definitely want to see Bob in his underwear. That's a fact.
Hey, everybody. This is Tony Todd. What's happening? You may know me from Candyman, The Rock, Sushi Girls, Zoom, Not Living Dead. A lot of pop culture media madness. Anyway, you're listening to IT in the D Show. Business.
I'm totally into Dave, but not right. So much Bob.
This is Robert Hayes, the Jet Striker to my mother. When I'm not hanging out at the Magumbo Bar, I'm listening to the IT and the D Show. It's worse than Detroit.
Is there such thing as a meat hangover?
I love my Monday meat steak.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and you're listening to the IT and the D Show. Tough guys. Oh!
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
The question isn't what are we going to do. The question is what aren't we going to do?
Ludicrous speed! Sir, had you better buckle up? Now buckle this! Ludicrous speed! Go!
Welcome. Thank you for listening. You have reached the IT and the D Show. This is episode 209, broadcasting out of Studio One here in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. This is Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek. Nuri the FNG's in the house. Randy, I do the Twitter's Walkers in the house. And Dr. Hook, Jeremiah from Daily Detroit, is in the house. Find us online, itandthed.com, and subscribe to us everywhere fine podcasts are sold. Guests this week include Kasten Thomas, resident cybersecurity guru, talking about no more ransom, and Brian Krantz, he's the IT director for the MEDC, talking about a program that we are launching together.
Hey, so before we get rolling, the single router Wi-Fi model just does not work for our increasingly high bandwidth world. What you need is a distributed system, like Eero. Whatever your Wi-Fi needs, Eero has the power to seamlessly blanket your home in fast, reliable Wi-Fi via Ethernet, wireless, or any combination of the two. Simply set it on a flat surface or plug it into a wall outlet to expand coverage in any room. Not to mention, with the addition of a third 5 gigahertz radio, the second generation Eero is now tri-band and twice as fast as its predecessor, which lets customers do more in every room of their home simultaneously. With the addition of the new Thread radio, Eero can now connect to low power devices such as locks, doorbells, and other sensors. Meanwhile, Eero Beacon is half the size but is even more powerful than the original Eero. Whichever model you choose, with Eero's incredible customer support, you can call and get a hold of a Wi-Fi expert within 30 seconds. Dude, I'm not gonna lie, like, setting this up in my house was a breeze, and the saturation is insane. Like, we've got, you know, the two kids, I mean, like, you've got three kids that are all doing the things, but, you know, there are tablets, there are TVs, there are Netflix, there are Hulu, there are all of the things going all at once, and nary a lag to be found.
I didn't get lag when I had my former provider. Now that I switched, got triple the bandwidth, I'm like, there's zero.
Dude, it's crazy. It's amazing. I love this stuff. So, hey, for free overnight shipping, visit Eero. That's Eero.com. Select overnight as the shipping option and enter IT and the D at checkout. That's Eero, Eero.com. Offer code IT and the D at checkout. And as always, thanks for the support, guys. Love the stuff.
Absolutely. Don't forget this August 17th, we are going to be at the Blackfin in Royal Oak, Michigan, kind of where our home base,
yeah,
for a good old-fashioned casual social. So 5 o'clock, no cover, no speakers, no idiots, just IT folks and good conversation.
Yeah, we had a really great meetup this past Thursday, the podcaster thing.
We kind of overwhelmed the place a little bit.
Well, you know, when places don't listen to us, this is what happens.
I mean,
we told them, and we told them exactly how many people were coming, and we told them this is what time they'll be there, and they opted to only have the 60-year-old lady behind the bar.
A bartender,
as
yeah.
The only bartender for the place.
Hold on. I'm getting his drink. I'll be back with you in a minute.
Yeah. Or a day.
Oh, Jesus.
You know what's bad? When I got to start ordering three at a time for myself.
That's normal? A Thursday. I
don't know. So,
it's just Bob.
Yeah. In case you've been living under a rock or you haven't figured out what's going on, the world's in chaos right now, or at least the East Coast of the U.S. is in utter chaos. And it's funny how this stuff.
Dude, and I'm going to say it right. Like I got the whole, like, yeah, we don't get political and that's fine. Man, jackasses, if you're a white supremacist and you're, like, down with all of the shit that is going on in Charlottesville and you think that's okay, and I don't, not even that. If you are one of those that decides that they want to water it down, they want to equivocate it, they want to free speech, any of that shit, just tune out. Because I don't want you listening to the show. I don't need you listening to the show. I sure as shit don't want you on my Facebook wall. I'll bleep this out later. Off. That's I care not anymore. My limit of has been reached. As Jer said, it's like the 24-hour cycle on a free game. Maybe tomorrow my will have been refilled, but I don't care anymore. I have no tolerance for any of that shit taking place anymore. The past weekend did something that none of our conversations, not that 4.5-hour marathon being Black in America session, none of the conversations did what this weekend did, which has made me ashamed of being a white person in America today.
So
rant off.
So like when we started Podcast Detroit, we said, what are the rules? And I said, there's two rules. There's no hate speech. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on.
Right.
And there's no multi-level marketing. So what we equivocate is
in a way, hate speech and multi-level marketing are the same thing.
I just don't want my name associated.
It's right. Empty promises of greater glory down the road, but it only really helps the guy at the top.
Exactly.
I just don't want my. I don't want my
friends. Bring your friends.
I don't want my name associated with either one. That was the common theme to that. But it's funny how the internet has taken to it, and you know when we talk about, hey, free speech, the internet's free speech. Yeah, great, but domain registrars aren't necessarily bastions of free
speech. Private companies.
They
man.
Are. They
you
are.
Know, and it's the same thing. In fact, I just got into this conversation today again about Colin Kaepernick and that whole thing. And I said, honestly, here's my only issue with Colin Kaepernick is that he's using the platform that his employer created in order to espouse his personal opinions. There is blowback being caused on his employer because of said personal opinions. And if you put that in any other context, anybody else remember the guy that worked for the company that ran Chrysler's social media account that accidentally tweeted out people in Detroit can't effing drive from the Chrysler account instead of his own account like he meant to?
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's how it works. So like that's my only issue there. And so like this – you know what? GoDaddy, they don't want to be associated with it. Good for them.
Good on you.
Google, same thing. Yeah. They double down too.
Yeah.
Yep. And I have no – absolutely zero issues. Yeah, like I said, you know – when it gets, but then it gets to like, well, you won't make a cake for ISIS or come on, we're not talking about that.
I got to tell you, I'm loving
the making cake story's got to stop. Cause that shit's so. Just make your damn cake.
The vanilla ISIS, the vanilla ISIS and Y'all Qaeda memes are killing me.
Those
killing
are some of my favorites.
So bad, so bad. But
because word to your motherland. ISIS, baby.
Oh, too cold. Don't ever.
All right, stop.
Ever.
Hate and listen.
Don't ever. So we got an interesting story coming out of Buffalo. Kasten should probably weigh in on this one. So basically, they had ransomware at a Buffalo hospital. They demanded.
Well, it's the opposite of a story that we heard coming out of St. Louis, I want to say about 5 or 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But this one, they wanted $30,000 ransom, which to me is like. At least ask for $250,000. Like, if you're going to go through all the trouble.
Well, their operating expenses, like, they cleared, like, $2 million in just profit last year.
So yeah.
$30,000 seems like a pretty reasonable.
Well, but to me, it almost, like, I would almost be skeptical. Like, I would think, like, if you're hitting a major corporation with ransomware, like a hospital, and you're only asking for $30,000, my immediate assumption is because you know that's what will pay immediately, and then you still won't do anything.
Right.
And that's what cybersecurity experts say is not to pay because you have no guarantee that they're actually going to come through with this, right?
It's like Dr. Evil going $1 million.
Sir,
throw me a freaking bone.
So here's where it gets funny. Not funny, but interesting.
Well, funny, haha. The milk smells funny.
They estimate expenses tied to that incident right now sit at about $10 million.
Yep.
$10 million
to fix, to fix it without the $30,000, without paying
the $30,000. So now it's looking at $250,000 to $400,000 a month for investment, upgraded technology, employment, education to basically reduce the risk of these tasks.
So basically, all the things they should have been doing in the first place, probably.
Right.
Well, like I said, I mean, it wasn't a hospital; it was a library. That's what it was that got hit with the ransomware.
You said how screwed up was it to attack a library?
I mean, and they locked the library out of their systems, and I think they hit them with they wanted $100,000 out of the library, but it was only cost them like $20,000 to replace everything
because
they had such outdated stuff.
Regardless,
we're good. We're gonna go ahead and replace everything
these guys
anyway.
Had 6,000 computers and basically had forced them back to using paper charts, which like all of medical records are EMR now, right?
Right.
So charts and face to face, like I need a doctor kind of stuff. Like
my wife's clinic just went to EMR like a year ago, maybe. Really? They went kicking and screaming last minute.
Wasn't an Affordable Health Care Act requirement to go EMR?
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's still, I think, open where you don't have to necessarily – so she was charting on Fridays till like 7 o'clock at night just to catch up. It was pretty bananas.
B-A-N-A.
Speaking of corporate hacks, last week HBO had a pretty bad week. And then it continued to get worse. So when this first thing happened, HBO had 1.5 terabytes of data that walked out the door.
Right.
No one was talking about much. A couple emails here and there, maybe a Game of Thrones episode that was actually attributed to an Indian public TV station or something, right?
Right.
But then it turns out
It seems like that's kind of the new thing. Like, you remember, like, before the new season of Orange is the New Black was released, there was that whole, they were trying to extort money out of Netflix or they were going to release them all online. And Netflix was like, meh.
Meh. But apparently telephone numbers and addresses of Game of Thrones actors and actresses have been released.
That's a problem.
And then that's only three.
Hi, Khaleesi.
I will not bend the knee.
I will not bend the knee. So 3.4 gigs of data have gone out.
Winter's not the only thing coming.
Gross.
But that was only 3.4 gigs of data. How much left is in the 1.5 terabytes
of data? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a relatively small percentage of that data file.
They say internal network administrator passwords were leaked as well, technical documents, scripts, episodes. It's going to be a crazy time for HBO.
Well, I mean, and that's a perfect tie-in to, you know, the whole – the story about, you know, what the – what hackers really think of your cybersecurity efforts, which is, and they, you know, they said, you know, the basically what they're – what they tend to go after is privileged accounts. And it's not that hard for them to get to them. I mean, that's the sad reality.
Because they said that 85% of hackers – the survey – this was at DEF CON this year.
Yep. Black Hat.
Black Hat. It was at Black Hat. Yeah. Said that humans – we're the ones responsible. We all know that, right?
Yep.
So your weakest chain is your help desk level one or your yep. nurse who doesn't use her IT systems well or things like that, right? So basically unpatched software was only 10%
yep.
of vulnerabilities.
And perimeter security was irrelevant, like literally irrelevant, like 90% basically. Like, I don't – that's – are you kidding me?
Yeah.
One of the things that didn't surprise me at all, they said multi-factor authentication
yeah.
being the hardest to beat, things like duo security and RSA right. tokens and stuff like that, because you have to have something physical as well.
Yep.
You have a very narrow window to get it right.
Well, I mean, that's why everybody should – you know, whether it's – I don't care if it's, you know, your stupid Gmail account or anything else. Two-factor authentication is not hard to enable. And it saves your ass when stuff happens.
Yep, I have it on Facebook. I have it yeah. on Gmail. Pretty much everything I use that supports it does two-factor.
Yeah.
So it's funny you bring up the Kaepernick thing and, you know, using a company to basically
yeah.
push its own benefit. What's your thoughts on Google firing the employee that wrote a 10-page memo criticizing their diversity tactics? And and Google just flat out, you know, fired the guy. And
his science was bullshit. Some of his points were obviously untrue. I don't – gosh, I'm really conflicted by this because I think what he said was wrong. I'm going to say that flat out. What he said, in my opinion, is tacitly wrong. Tacitly? Yeah. Completely wrong, right?
That's the right word, yeah.
But I mean, like, geez, it's like – free speech, yes, we all – I mean, it's a good way to start a discussion.
Well, but we
opinion.
All – but it's, I would assume, especially with a place like Google, I mean, we've all seen the – I guess to quote, you know, the phenomenal movie Porky's, you know, the moral turpitude clause. You know, if you take an action that is against the interests of the company, they have every right to say bye-bye.
It's a representative of the company. No, yeah. Totally.
Can't now, you just have this conversation over a beer at the bar like most of us employees do?
They say, oh, you're not happy with the way things are going at your company? We have a support group for that. It's right. at the bar right. and we meet every day.
Right.
Did it become a Medium post or how did that get out to the rest of the world?
Yeah, I believe so.
All right.
Yeah, he went and hit the publish button.
So if he would have done that internally on like an internal message board or something, it probably would have.
I thought that's where it started was internally.
It did. It did. Start internal. It was, yeah, internal. And then somebody picked it up and put it out. Yeah.
But I look at everything that's happened in Silicon Valley. I mean, it's. They had to fire him because you have a male saying that females don't belong in this industry, and that's the biggest – one of the biggest things they're talking about right now.
Well,
so
you're
Google
overstating
had
what he said. He didn't say that.
Right. But I mean, it's – okay, take a 10-page manifesto down to a one sentence. But in the end, they don't belong there is what he was thinking.
Well, the interesting thing to me is that 10 years ago, Apple was promoting Think Different. Now comes Google, goes, well, not so much.
Well, it's
well, Google used to have Do No Evil on their homepage. That went away 7 years ago.
There's still a problem in Silicon Valley, though. Like, I mean, think of the things that happened at Uber, right?
Yeah,
I mean, Uber was
yeah.
very publicized. But even then, there is a massive disparity in gender and diversity at all
yeah.
in tech engineering roles.
No, it's one big giant echo chamber. We've talked about this a million times. I mean, you know, everybody likes to – I mean, it's weird when you see, you know, so much stuff going on here in Detroit that's, you know, women-led and female-based and all that kind of stuff and not really realizing that it's not like that in a lot of other areas around the country.
Go to any one of my sales kickoffs, dude. Like, we've talked about this ad nauseum for 4 years.
The days of the programmer are still here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the navy blue sport coat, the khaki pants, and the brown shoes, and a sea of 40-year-olds.
Khaki pants and brown shoes are out now after this weekend, just so you know.
Yeah. Nobody, so are nobody, tiki torches.
No, so no more tiki. No, the save the tiki post is I'm going to stick behind
they're
that.
They're tan pants. Wear brown shoes. They're dress shoes. Butthole.
It was so bad that they said that Seattle had a problem with like Amazon hiring mostly male engineers.
Yep.
That Seattle's dating is just miserable for everybody involved. Like I've read posts about women complaining about Seattle's dating market because of that Amazon programmer kind of.
Huh.
I was going to say there's probably about 10% of the population that's okay with the
Right. Nice.
So an interesting, a couple interesting AI articles came out. One being that the best video gamer in the world got just snoop cammed. Smoked by an AI program in an international video game contest. Just yep. absolutely destroyed the best video gamer in the world.
Which, again, is why we don't want to put them in charge of our military control systems.
For one, it's the video game community could be absolutely stunned because they're thinking there's no way. At least it'll be close or something like chess.
Because they're all too young to remember Big Blue and that whole thing.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Right. Watson at Jeopardy, right?
Yeah.
But like here we have Elon Musk coming out, speaking out against it, which is very interesting, calling AI the death to all humanity.
Well, dude, he's been saying that for a while, that AI scares the ever-living shit out of him. We've said it.
He said AI is more of a risk than North Korea. That's where
I will agree with that.
Probably accurate.
Long-term probably is, yes.
Because AI is not going to launch cardboard missiles.
Well, Google really just shut down their AI. Mm-hmm. They shut down their AI because the AI started talking to the other AI, and they created their own language all of a sudden.
Oh, Facebook?
Oh, Facebook.
No,
yeah.
That was Facebook that did that, where they had two different bots that were running, and it's not so much that they even started talking to each other. It's that they started talking to each other in patterns, still in English, that nobody could understand or decode why. Like they would repeat words over – certain words over and over and over again, and they couldn't figure out what the scoop was. It was Google that had – they had three AIs that were all paired together, and two of them decided that the third one couldn't sit with them anymore, developed their own language and encryption algorithm that even the third AI couldn't get into, and they were like, nope, bloop.
Still not a good idea.
So artificial intelligence also segregates the cafeteria tables.
Exactly.
Timmy's not cool enough to sit at this table. We got a couple funny stories there, you know, to end this out. And you know what we learned in DNA sampling. You know, we've all watched the Channel 4 Dateline NBC shows. And,
Mother of God.
Oh, by the way, if you haven't seen the Netflix trailer for It Looks Like Making of a Murderer. And it's basically like a high school age kid. And he's like, I didn't do it, man. And he's like really serious. And it's like this bizarre, like creepy music. And you think it's going to be another murder mystery thing.
Okay.
And it's basically who drew the wieners on the teacher's cars in the parking lot.
Nice.
And they basically set the trailer up for like a murder mystery. And it's going to be a legit show on Netflix.
Of course.
And
it
I
is.
Can't wait to see it.
And yet they couldn't renew Sense8. No,
this one is.
This one is making a movie.
So here's a guy that breaks into a house. And not only does he steal stuff in the house, but he decides to leave a stool sample in the toilet.
Right.
And doesn't flush. So they had to fish the thing out with a fish net, and they took a DNA sample to find out who the mystery.
That's a crappy job.
Exactly.
And he now sits in jail on a $180,000 bail. It's pretty amazing.
But apparently that was the first time that they've used poop to do a DNA sample.
So all you aspiring robbers out there, make sure if you take a grumpy in the house you're breaking into, flush the freaking toilet.
Flush the toilet. Or just how about not?
Well, and it's one of those things where like how many
– You got to go.
It's just the latest thing that like if crooks were smarter, they wouldn't get caught. And this, you know, it's the stupid thief stories that are always the best. Like the ones – I still love the one where the DEA raided a drug house. And then literally just set up shop, still wearing their DEA vests. And one by one, people kept coming in to buy weed.
Can I get a bag?
Yeah. Hey. Like from a guy behind a table wearing a DEA vest.
Well, you can get them at Gibraltar. You can get the DEA vest at Gibraltar.
Yeah,
they
true.
Don't know the difference.
Hey, are you guys actual DEA?
Yeah.
Oh, whatever, man. Just give me my bag.
Yeah, right, man. Give me my bag.
So apparently so an article came out of Australia, and you know it's going to hit here soon because usually this stuff does. So there's a new trend going on when the people are on the train or on public transportation.
Dude. From New York City, too. This is an Australian article about New York City.
Oh, New York City?
Oh, yeah, no, Australian article about New York City.
Sorry. Go ahead, Neri. You sent it over.
So apparently people riding on the train, you know, you have your Apple devices. Apple devices have something called AirDrop where you can send files wirelessly to other iPhones, to iPads, to laptops. But apparently now people are using it to send unsolicited pictures of dicks to random passerbys on the train. So guy just pops open his iPhone. It's like, oh, I see people with AirDrop. And you get a message saying you received a note from this person.
iPhone 3 would like to send you a message.
And you click it, and it's a picture of a dick.
I feel like we need to spend all day tomorrow on the queue line.
Just to get a story right.
Make sure to set your AirDrop preferences to contacts only or turn it off. Don't leave it
not
everyone.
Not until after tomorrow.
Right.
this will archive on Wednesday, right. So we got tomorrow. Right.
Well, I'll see you guys all at what, 12 o'clock?
Right.
Canfield stop. I feel like we have work to do. Hard work.
I feel like this would be a really it'd be a very uplifting story for your site, Jared.
I'm looking forward to erecting this.
Exactly. Good hard hitting journalism.
Not just who drew them on the cars, it's who texted me this on the train.
I can't make these jokes much longer, guys.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back, Kasten Thomas, talking all things cybersecurity, no more ransom. This is the IT in the D show.
And we'll be right back.
IT in the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey, this is John Schneider from Nip/Tuck Smallville, the haves and the have-nots. Oh, Dr. Quinn, hot in Cleveland, Secret Life of the American Teenager, and just about everything you can possibly imagine. And oh, yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. You're listening to Bob and Dave. It's the IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
Welcome back. Thank you for still listening to us. This is segment 2, episode 209 of the IT in the D show, broadcasting live here at Studio 1 in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. It's Bob the Sales Guy, Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG. Randy, I do the Twitter's Walkers.
I said to do math in my head quick. We are officially 193 episodes past where you thought we would end.
Oh, my God. For the record, if you never heard, I said we're going to do 16 episodes and we're going to run out of crap to talk about.
We're also 209 episodes since the last major incident here.
The last major incident?
Major incident.
The less safety issue.
Oh, no, we're like one episode.
Right. Issue, yeah.
Bob did break a bunch of glass in the...
I did break glass. I hung up my dick butt comic that was drawn from Tony Maiello, and I bought a frame and I had it shipped by Amazon, and I spent like a half an hour getting the frame done, and then I put it right on the wall and it fell right down as the other time I put it on the wall and shattered it. But anyway, speaking of things shattered, Kasten Thomas is in the house. Bad segue of the show.
What a segue.
No, we got Kasten Thomas here. He's our resident cybersecurity expert guru from Interworks Technologies. Kasten.
One of them. I can't be the only one.
You're the only one.
Okay.
You're the only one we rely on. So I guess hot button of the day, or you know, obviously between all the breaches we talked about, but this ransom stuff going on, people are taking a stand against it?
Yeah. Yeah.
As they should?
As we all should. And Interworks on July 25th joined on the one-year anniversary an organization called No More Ransom. And No More Ransom was formed about, well, a year and a month ago by Europol, the Netherlands Police Department, the National Police Department, which is the equivalent of our combination of FBI and state police, I guess you'd say, and McAfee, Intel Security at the time, and Kaspersky's Labs. And on the one-year anniversary, we're now up to 108 sponsoring organizations. And that includes Checkpoint, Cylance, and a number of other really awesome, awesome organizations. We're banding together in order to fight ransomware. Yeah,
that sounds like a pretty noble thing, right, fighting ransomware.
Yeah.
But like, how are you guys doing it? What are your like pillars of fighting ransomware?
Well, the idea is have a one-stop shop location, a website, nomoreransom.org, where anyone can go, no charge, no registration, no email, and gain access to all the known tools that have been published in order to combat or decrypt ransomware.
So, you know, our two topics in segment one segue perfectly into this. And what do you say to said hospital that said no and ended up costing them $10 million? And what do you say to said library that said screw it and pulled the plugs and it cost a third of what the ransomware would have cost? I mean, because you have two pretty distinct stories of either complying or not complying with ransomware.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the end of the day, You know, the FBI says don't pay ransom. It encourages the bad guys to do it even more because you're monetizing and rewarding them for doing it. But at the end of the day, an organization looks and says, I can pay $30,000 or I can pay $10 million in ongoing cost. But like Nuri said earlier, you know, some of that's the things they should have been doing anyway.
Right. So ransomware is not just kids in basements anymore, right? This is bigger, right?
Oh, no. It's an industry.
It's an industry. I mean, we have the concept that hackers are either, you know, nasty guys working for the Russians or North Koreans or ISIS or whatever, or it's some kid in his parents' basement. It's not. These are well-funded, well-organized crime.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah.
It definitely. You
know, we've got new phenomenon like ransomware as a service.
Right.
It definitely wasn't – there's as a service for everything. French fries as a service.
Right.
couldn't be as coordinated as the – this is Officer Smith and you are with the IRS and you have to pay fine.
Those stupid phone calls.
Like, jeez. It's like over like the Sam.
This is final warning.
Well, it's like from Speaker Sam when you were a kid and you could make it say but.
Oh, like speak and spell?
Right, totally.
Well, I mean, this is bigger, right? WannaCry had like 40 different localizations, right? So it basically had perfect text in 40 different languages telling you how to go pay the fine, basically, right?
One of the great things that great being like infamous, one of the horrible great things that the ransomware folks have done is they've improved customer service. They're improving
Thank
usability.
You for calling WannaCry support. For English, press 1.
To decrypt your files, press 1. To stay locked down, press 2.
So, I mean, as a strategy to combat it, one thing to say no, and then I read something today that's saying, you know, I think you posted this on LinkedIn, checking the box is the worst cybersecurity strategy you could probably have.
Oh, I didn't say you that, know. But thank you.
It was somewhat, you know. But so, I mean, what do you
– checking the box.
Firewall, check. Intrusion detection, check.
Gotcha.
Antivirus, check. You know what I mean? Like, hey, here's the –
That's been the compliance mindset that we're doing security because it's being required of us by either regulation or by
compliance,
our customers.
Yeah. Governance.
And so the real issue is how do you put together a security program that builds toward what everybody's really going to is called organizational resiliency. You know, and that's a combination of security. It's a combination of disaster recovery. It's a combination of business processes and even picking who your vendors are based on their security levels.
But, I mean, you look at, you know, not only that, perimeter security is irrelevant. Why even have it anymore?
Well, there's an argument for that.
Seriously, I've seen that. I guess what's your take on that?
Well, one of the big things of security is that hackers are going toward the low-dangling fruit and the high-value assets. So if you don't have high-value assets, your risk assessment, your risk appetite is going to be higher than if you've got PHI or if you've got HIPAA information or PCI kinds of information. So if you're not a target, you're not going to have the same investment in security as if you don't have high-value assets that are available to
hackers. Well, I mean, not only that, but I mean, so why would – I mean, as much as we love the stories of – you know, physical penetration testing, ding, and all that stuff.
Where's the bell?
The bell needs to move.
My wife won't let me wear my T-shirt out that says I'm a penetration expert.
There you go. As much as we love those stories, why would you go through the headache and hassle of walking through the front door of a building, probably winding up on security cameras, having to deal with people, taking the risk of being seen, being noticed, being caught, when you can just send somebody an email that the idiot will click and give you root access to everything they do? I mean, it's risk analysis on the side of the hackers as well.
I mean, if I'm going to break into a facility, I got to get rid of all my fingerprints.
Right.
So, you know, and sandpaper is really painful. So,
well, not only that, you know, walking around wearing gloves might be a little suspicious. Yeah.
And don't forget, you can't go number two while you're there.
Right.
Well, you have to flush. It's okay.
Take your data, leave a deuce.
Yeah.
Skid marks is still a problem.
Right.
No, but it seems – it's funny. I had a meeting today and I said, you know, it's funny. I read an article on how not to call in a CISO and it basically said you can't say – and you know, big data, machine learning. And I go, it sucks because that's like, that's what I would do.
Like, that's my call. That's,
like, I can't say big data, machine learning, you know, analytics. I go, oh my God. I mean, and he's like, yeah, it's amazing. I mean, how many vendors sit in front of me and they just say garbage. And yet those are the people that are like, that are the, they're in half the businesses we call them.
Gotta shift those paradigms.
Yeah. Oh,
buzzword, buzzword bingo cards.
Come on.
Oh, part of the problem is that way too many salespeople don't know how to talk about the business aspect. And the big transition you've had with CIOs and CISOs over the last few years is that they're not techies anymore. They're business people. So if you go in to talk technology to a business person, their eyes are going to glaze over and you're going to get that response.
I mean, it's just like selling a car, though. You got to know enough where they got, you know, what's under the hood. It's a 2-liter turbo, gets 40 miles per gallon.
Yeah, but right? You know the old joke, the difference between a used car salesman and a computer salesman.
Oh, I got to know this. I don't know this
come
one.
Come on, come on. Ding, ding.
I don't know this one.
Used car salesman knows when he's lying to you.
Oh, come on.
Where's Bell?
No. No, Bell. No, no.
Light Bell.
No.
Muted Bell.
Right.
No, but getting back to no more ransom, the idea is that we've now got world-class law enforcement agencies binding together with cybersecurity experts both on the fix-it and prevent-it side of things. And so you go to this one-stop shop and you've got access to how to prevent ransomware. They've got a great tool. We've got a great tool within the organization called the Crypto Sheriff, where you can upload a piece of ransomware, upload a Bitcoin address, upload the text from your ransom message, and it will say of the 200 ransom cyber keys out there, we've got a fix for those, or we don't have a fix. So it's really cool stuff. And one of the things that I like about this, it's like InfraGuard. And the idea is that we've got the coming together of – oh, ding, ding. We've got the coming together.
No, not for that. Not for that.
We got the coming together of private industry and public service organizations and law enforcement binding together to do what we do best. And this wasn't formed by regulation or legislation. It was a coming together out of a need of a lot of organizations that's 100% volunteer-based, no financial contribution from any of the organizations. We're just getting together and form and creating this worldwide informal network of cybersecurity professionals who have one mission, and that's to make the internet a safer place to be.
I guess walk me through the, you know, me being dumb guy and how these guys are doing it. These crypto keys, I mean, A, are they generated like software keys? Are they the same, ubiquitous? I mean,
so think of it like remember like PGP emails back in the day. I mean, remember when that was all the rage? And like, you know, and so you're basically your email would come across encrypted, and unless you had the key and you could type in the code, it wouldn't decrypt the email. Or unless, you know, you had the private key on your system, it wouldn't decode it.
Right.
Same thing. You know, so I mean, it's, you know, basically, hey, that screen pops up and says, all right, all your file are belong to us. You know, you can either, you know, and then contact us to get a key. And then it is. It's like a license key. You type it in. Then it's supposed to go ahead and decrypt
your
stuff.
So it's an RSA token. It's not like you can call home base here at no ransomware.
But so what they're doing.
Absolutely.
I wanted to figure that.
The way these
that.
Keys have been acquired, and every piece of ransomware type, it's like a type of virus, and your antivirus software would go out and eradicate this. The different keys are for different types of ransomware.
So they're dumb enough to use. They're dumb enough to use the same keys.
Oh, absolutely. This is kiddie scripts.
Well, yeah.
The majority of ransomware has been built by a couple of people, and then it gets dispersed across the dark web. So other people are using those encryption methods and maybe even the same keys.
Yep.
So now you've got one place where you can go and say, do I have a piece of ransomware that can be decrypted? And the encryption keys have been found by law enforcement finding it. There's a great story of the Germans getting and prosecuting a ransomware promulgator, and they found the keys on the computer. So they published it at nomoreransom.org. So, you know, another fascinating thing is that some of the people who've created ransomware have a come to Jesus moment and say, you know, I really feel bad about doing this. So they publish their keys. So the idea here is that you've got one place that you can go, or a technical person can go to nomoreransom.org and find everything they need in one place.
Now, browsing through the website, it's kind of amazing. There's over like 100 different decryptors available, and there's step-by-step guides, and it's just a really good one-stop resource. I mean, you Google, how do I get rid of this ransomware? You have no idea what's coming back in your Google searches.
And a lot of these are being contributed by the sponsoring organizations, and you'll also notice on here that there are no links to the organizations. You don't have links to who's providing
right.
It may give an attribution. But the whole idea is to remove the profit from creating ransomware and to lower the cost to zero of eradicating ransomware.
So, like, think about it like inoculations. Like, okay, so we know measles, this is what the measles virus looks like. This is what the measles virus always looks like. Therefore, we have a shot that prevents you from getting the measles or deals with it after the fact. That's that. But like the common cold, there's no inoculation for it because there's 4,500 different mutations that are out there, and it keeps continuously evolving and mutating, yada, yada, yada. But once you see – like once you have a variant of it and you have that crypto key, great. Every other instance of that variant can be handled by that key. But if somebody grabs it, tweaks it – like so it was – wasn't it the guy that found the back door in WannaCry that shut it all down?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I forget what it was.
The website kill switch.
Right.
Basically, he registered the domain, and all of a sudden the ransomware reached out and was like, oh, it's there. I'm not going to encrypt.
And then, but then he took the code base and released it as – we just talked about this in the last 2 weeks. Oh, he created Kronos,
yep.
The one that went after the financial institutions,
yep.
And released it. So, okay, great. He figured out how to stop that and all variants of that. Fine. But then he took it and created something else using that code base that the WannaCry fix wouldn't necessarily take care of. But once you have Kronos and you break it down and you have that key that takes care of it, then all further instances of that will be taken care of as well.
Is that an X-Men character?
Kronos. No,
it's
the incarnation of time.
Oh.
And father of Zeus.
Yes.
There's also Sacha Baron Cohen who played that in – what movie was that? Anyway.
Borat? Right.
Same guy, but
you are hacked.
Exactly.
Very nice. It's a new Bitcoin.
You are hacked.
No, but here's like the ransomware stuff's getting out of hand. It's like you have people impersonating grandkids trying to get grandparents to send them $3,000 because they got stuck in Europe. It's like,
well, I mean, that's not even ransomware. That's phishing. I mean, like that happens via Facebook Messenger.
That's what I'm doing to make my living. I'm selling oranges on the highway. I'm like, is there a better way to earn a living than having to do that? I mean. The ransomware.
Well, you've got new phenomenon.
I'd pay money to see you dress up as a giant orange on the highway.
Oh, I totally will. Annoying orange. I could totally do that.
He could just go to a bad tanning booth and be there.
No, but like I don't.
And you know, then run for president.
Right. So, what, I mean, to bring this into perspective, what are the numbers that people are paying out for ransomware on a yearly? Do you know?
I don't know. I really don't.
I mean, is it in the billions yet?
I don't know that it's in the billions, but you know it's difficult to calculate because there's so much that goes unreported.
There's a lot of this that may happen behind the scenes.
Kind of like you get catfished. And you're like, I'm not telling any of my friends.
Exactly, you're not Monte Teo announcing it to the entire exactly. Free world, right?
Actually, there's a website that says $5 billion in 2017.
Oh my God!
Yeesh.
And it's underreported, I'm sure.
That's crazy. That's a lot of dollars.
We're in the wrong business.
Yeah, we're not ready. We're not, no.
Meatstick.decryptor. Right? So, Kasten, how do you guys, like Interworks Tech, how do you contribute to this effort? What are you guys doing?
Our primary focus is to promote the effort here in the United States. It's really caught on like fire in Europe, particularly Western Europe. It's getting some traction into Asia as well. We have seen a lot of sponsors come in, you know, like Cylance, like Checkpoint, and probably 20 other organizations. But Interworks' main contribution, since we don't have cybersecurity researchers that came from the NSA and those types, we're really here to promote the effort and direct people and do the outreach to get more people aware of it. So, you know, like I said, InterWorks' mission is to make the internet a safer place to live, work, and I guess sleep.
Download porn.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, and I guess that's a good question. I mean, like, you know, you mentioned this is, you know, coming out of, I believe it was Norway, the high tech.
Netherlands.
Yep. Is ransomware bigger or worse? Because, I mean, obviously we always have a very U.S.-centric view of things. I mean, is this a bigger or worse or equal issue over in Europe and overseas elsewhere?
It affects everyone. I do believe the number of dollars that are being hit is greater in the United States. But again, I don't track the numbers.
Is that sort of like a PC versus Mac issue? Like there's more – like the viruses hit PCs because there are more of them and yada, 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 or –
maybe we Americans spend more time places where we shouldn't be. I don't know.
Go figure.
What's interesting, though, on the No More Ransom website, there's a new Mac ransomware as well, which mm-hmm. is actually distributed free on the dark web as a service.
Correct.
Which is ridiculous. And there's also Linux versions of it as well.
Absolutely.
So it's like it used to be probably just a PC thing, but now it's definitely spreading to other platforms.
It's spreading because, again, the hackers go where the money is, and there's a lot of money in Linux now.
Mm-hmm. Especially yep. for corporations.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Very interesting. So no more – is it – no, I'm sorry.
No more ransom.
No more ransom.org.
.org.
Yeah. Well, yeah, interesting. I'm clicking on like there's a report a crime thing that takes you out to the FBI's Internet Complaint Center. Internet Crime Complaint Center.
It will take you to the country of origin. So
oh, yeah. No, yeah.
If you're a multinational and you're in Romania, you click on that and tell them you're from Romania. It will take you to the – exact point where you need to report.
There's like
the crime.
40 different countries that are signed on to this.
Yep.
Luxembourg, Portugal, Russia, Slovakia, South Korea.
That's like
amazing.
I said, that's our purpose as InterWorks. We really want to promote this in the United States. If anybody wants to get in contact with me to become a part of the effort, please, you can reach me on LinkedIn. You can reach me just by Googling Kasten Thomas and I'll pop up. My emails are not a secret.
So, I mean, so what do you do as a home user? Is there anything to safeguard yourself? You know, me, I've always downloaded the free firewall, the free AVG, and the, that's 20 years of being on the internet. That's all I've ever done. Is there a better precaution to take?
Yeah, there are precautions that.
Backups. Lots and lots of
backups.
Well,
no, I got backups on top of backups. Trust me.
Well, you got backups, but you've got all the preventative measures. And we've published things on our internet. You can go to the page on nomoreransom.org, and it has preventative measures as well. A lot of what we do, the main problem is people just don't use common sense as a home user. They reuse passwords. They don't get a password manager. They're not backing up regularly. They're clicking on stupid stuff, and they're going out and browsing porn on peer-to-peer sites and downloading stuff they shouldn't. And you just can't find a patch for the idiot at the keyboard.
We've all been there. Trust
me. Well, and honestly, Nuri,
speak for yourself.
Nuri, I'm thinking back to the whole conversation we had back in the day about sit your parents down and taught them about the internet day. I do. I almost feel like we could take I'm clicking around FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center site. We could probably do an entire episode or at least a good segment. Like they have a really good breakdown on here are the schemes that are currently floating around outside of ransomware, whether it's, auction fraud, counterfeit cashier's checks, your parcel courier schemes, identity theft, internet extortion. They've even, the Nigerian letter or the 419 scams, third-party receiver of funds. I mean, it's like there's a lot of good information out here about shit you should be aware of as a person on the internet because this crap's everywhere.
And where do you start? Nomoreransom.org.
Right.
I mean, it's a great launching point to get a lot of information. And the tools aren't for the PC neophyte or the Mac or, people new to it. But, if somebody gets hit or if your parents get hit and they have a computer support person going, tell them, look, point that person to nomoreransom.org because it is that one-stop shopping place where you can go and find everything up to date in one place.
That should be the Christmas present for everybody's fathers and parents or grandparents this year is the 2-terabyte Western Digital Drive to plug this in and copy and paste your documents.
And just auto backup everything. Well, I did it with my in-laws.
And auto disconnect if it's there connected, it's going to get encrypted too.
Well, I got one for my dad. I said, every time you back up every other week, plug it in, unplug it, not leave it in. But, like, you know, that's that's what you got to do now because, you know.
I'm impressed that your father has 2 terabytes of stuff that he needs backed up.
Dude, my dad's a bad man on the – like, he downloads – that man's wanted.
You might want to qualify that. No.
He's wanted in Germany for so much music theft of polka music.
Your dad is the illicit polka king?
Yeah, it's instead of Napster, it's one of the worst –
Popster.
The man who knows that the real Yankovic is that, not Weird Al.
Right.
That is – he was Polish, by the way. There was – he like he created Bitcoin. He created like German music currency at the
– Oh, with the CDs?
Yeah, he would like – he would they would play Euchre, and instead of like throwing a $5 bill, he would throw CDs out. Like he completely redefined currency at that damn club. Anyway, smart man.
He was the first alternative currency.
Exactly. Pre-Bitcoin. So anyway, Kasten, appreciate the time. We got all your stuff on how to find you, and we'll post it all in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Thank you for the thank you for the time, and definitely thank you for the insights. We love having you on.
It's always great being here.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back. Brian Krantz, the IT director for the MEDC. This is the IT and the D show.
And we'll be right back.
IT and the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit. One beer at a time.
Hi, I'm Brittany Daniel from The Game, and you're listening to IT in the D Show.
ITinTheD.com.
Welcome back. Thank you for the time. This is episode 209. I did not mean to rhyme that. This is segment 3 of the IT in the D Show.
You're rhyming. You don't even know it.
I know,
it's
amazing.
Right?
You're supposed to say you're a poet and didn't know it. This is Bob the Sales Guy.
Do not like green eggs and ham. No. Do not like them, Bob I am.
That's Dave the Geek. You just heard Nuri the FNG.
You can't rhyme, obviously.
Randy, I do the Twitters Walkers in studio, as is Dr. Hook, Jeremiah from Daily Detroit. Find us online, itandthed.com. Give us a like on all the socials and subscribe to us everywhere. Fine podcasts are sold.
Yeah, don't forget, this Thursday we're over at the Blackfin back room, where it all kind of started rising to infamy. 5 p.m. start time. No agendas, no speakers, no nothing. Just show up, come out, have a drink. Don't, whatever. Chill, chat.
Drink.
Whatever.
Exactly. But hey, we are joined last minute. We appreciate you coming out this way. It's so far of a drive. I think you were a mile away.
took me 5 minutes to get here.
Brian Krantz is in the house. He's the IT director for the Michigan Economic Development Corp, better known as the MEDC. What's going on?
Pure Michigan. Better well known as Pure Michigan. You say Pure MEDC, people just glaze over like, what is that? Pure Michigan, everybody knows.
What is John? So our John Kerfoot that does the spoof videos. How is that? I have to ask that first, and then we'll dive into the good stuff. How is
Bob? You're getting into dicey territory now.
How is that? Was that like ha ha fun? Ha ha laugh laugh? Or is that like we're gonna assassinate this guy? You don't have to answer.
Let's just say that we really enjoy our Pure Michigan brand and the videos that we do with Tim Allen.
Right.
We're aware that there are other spoof videos out there, and many, many people across this fine state do enjoy those.
Well, it's kind of like you know you made it. That was like a thing with Weird Al. It's like, I've known I've made it when Weird Al does one of my songs.
Oh, well, then the Red Wings should be thrilled.
I wouldn't go that far.
You know, we can admit that they are very good and interesting videos that definitely make people laugh.
We were going to book
them. good note card, Brian.
I hear PR talk. Yeah. I hear the PR talk in
and
my
that's
head.
All I can say about that.
Right. You've been in politics way longer than I've known you. But hey, no, the reason why we're out here is we've been working together behind the scenes for quite some time, and we recently ran a pilot. But if you heard us ever talk about the IT and the D Career Academy, it's been something that me and you – have been working on for almost, 2 years now?
Not that long, but a while.
Writing it on a bar napkin and sharing ideas and seeing what you want, you know, what's going on. But, you know, we're kicking this thing into full force, and we're going to be launching Detroit soon.
Yeah, we're really excited about it at the MEDC, especially on the talent team. We have right now quite a, let's just say, lack of IT talent in the state. We're looking to bring people in out of the state. We're looking to train people in the state, as a lot of people know in the industry, with mobility coming in and things like our Planet M and the big program that we're running with all of that. I mean, there's IT and technology is pouring into the state.
So, just to give a quick backup for what we're doing is we're offering people a self-study program to obtain your basic CompTIA certifications. If you're not in IT, that's your A plus, Net plus, and if you're really smart, your Security plus.
Well, it's step one on the path that we've been talking about for years. I mean, all the way back to MEDC's Shifting Gears program,
right. Which gets you, you know, basically you can get a help desk job, and there's other jobs you get to, but yeah. That's the one, the easiest path of entry, and from there, it's kind of like you're on your way to a career in IT.
Yeah, and that's what's great about it. I mean, some of the commitments that we're looking at, some of the numbers, I know that we have right now somewhere around 98,000 jobs on mitalent.org that we're looking to fill in the state.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you look at the unemployment rate right now, it's fairly low, and I think it's somewhere around 4.something%.
4.3 was the last.
The unemployment rate actually in Metro Detroit is lower than Boston, New York, and Los Angeles.
Yeah. And what's great about that is that's an average rate of employment. So when you're looking at it, we're almost at full employment. So what we're having trouble with, especially in Michigan, is people are job hopping instead of coming into the state. So right. We're looking for attraction. We're looking to upscale. So, you know, you're doing something. You're thinking, you know what? I want to do a little bit of something else. Maybe I want to get into IT. I don't know how to do it. Maybe you don't have a college education. You don't have the time nor the money. But you want to do something. So that's what we're doing. That's why we partnered with IT and the D to build this program and to help those people.
Well, and there, you know, there's other programs that are great out there, like the Grand Circus folks. They're mm-hmm. setting people up for coding.
Yeah.
And that's one action. But that's one faction. But we were looking at this as, hey, people aren't looking at – there's still going to be need for Cisco engineers. There's still going to be need for
hundreds,
server admins. And
right.
If not over 1,000 open help desk jobs in Southeast Michigan right
yep.
now. You know, and there's only going to be more because I mean there are more call centers that are being you know insourced and you know into the area.
Right. Well, one of the things that a lot of people talk about on Daily Detroit is that they're always saying, you know, I have a job, but I don't have a good job, or I'm not making enough. Mm-hmm. And IT is the kind of career path, especially in today's economy, where you can make that good money that you want to, right. you know, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, instead of talking in the like the $12 an hour zone.
Right.
Well, surprisingly, you know, we've spent – and not just in Michigan but across the country. We spent a lot of years, if not decades, telling people, you know, from high school you have to go to college and that's how you're going to be successful. But the truth is there's a lot of people out there that are just as smart as people that go to college but just don't want to do that, whether they're, you know, welding nuclear reactors. I mean, you don't have to go to college to do that, but you have to be highly intelligent. You have to have some serious skills to do something like that.
Right.
So when you look at our Going Pro program that we're doing, skilled trades, professional trades, you know, you're looking at things in like advanced manufacturing, construction, healthcare, and information technology.
Well, but hold on, Dave, real quick. Those things, it's funny, those things all tie together because like my uncles and dads and everybody, they were all tool makers.
Yep.
Right.
You can't go into a tool shop these days without being working a computer. Mm-hmm. You have to know how to run these types of software. So, I mean, you need a basic IT background, but you can't, like I said, these skilled trades, you have to be tech savvy.
Well, so we were talking when I was talking with the Ford and UAW guys about the call center thing. One of the things they were talking about is that even some of those, okay, you want to go get an apprenticeship at the electrician's hall, they're giving preferential treatment to people that have A+, Net plus certs.
Right.
You know, it's that same kind of thing. And I think, you know, part of the issue, Brian, like you were just touching on, is, you know, we've kind of joked, but it's true that, you know, IT is sort of the new blue collar.
A little bit.
You know, and the whole Vo-tech thing, it's one of the issues that's one of the other issues that's going on in the state is that entire generation of kids. Like I was stunned when I, you know, my nieces and nephews and as they were going through school, there's no shop class anymore. There's no, you know, any of that. Like it is, you know, people have been basically told and molded that, okay, when you get out of high school, you go to college. Correct. That's what you do. When there is that entire other path out there, mm-hmm. that's perfectly fine. And especially even in IT, employers don't really care as much if you have a degree, if you've got these certs right. that say you can do stuff.
Right. There's just talking about skilled trades, not IT, but there's a welding place in Michigan, a school. There's a 6-month wait for doing things like advanced welding. You know, maybe – I don't know how long the program is, but when you come out of that program, you're making $70,000,
$80,000
a year. Yep. So if you leave – you know, you get in the program out of high school, 19, 20, 21 years old, you have these very well-defined skills, very – you know, skills that you need to learn things. And here you go. Here's $70,000 or $80,000. You're 21, 22 years old.
Yep.
And now you have an entire career that you can go down.
Well, we've talked with Jimmy McKnight. You know, he's a welder by trade. And, you know, not only that, I mean, yeah, those are jobs here. Yeah. But there are plenty of places overseas, you know, that U.S. companies have locations where they'll pay for your travel, your na-na-na, and
everything
else.
Wasn't he a contractor in Afghanistan?
And they'll pay you a good six figures.
Right. Now, we'd like to keep jobs in Michigan.
Obviously.
He brought the money back, though.
Right, right. I mean, you know, and he came back. I'm sure he went out, did his contract, and came back to Michigan.
I think you have to worry about 20 people moving to Afghanistan.
You never know. You know, but you look at things in advanced manufacturing, 3D modeling. You know, I mean, you don't necessarily need history and, you know, arts appreciation to do 3D modeling.
Right.
Right. I mean, you know, construction jobs, information, healthcare, registered nurses. I mean, that is – it's a certification of a sense where it's not that four-year, you know, college – well, 5 years college education where people are going. You know, it's there are many more opportunities, but the message has been college, college, college. But I think especially here in Michigan, we're realizing, wow, you know what? That's as important as learning a skilled trade. You can make the same kind of money in each one of them.
And you can do it without incurring $50,000, $80,000, $100,000 in debt that follows you for the rest of your natural life.
Being in your mid-40s and still paying your wife's student loans. Did I say that out loud? She's not listening anymore.
You know, so what kind of – do you guys ever run into any kind of stigmas of things where it's like, I don't know if I want to sit in front of a computer or I don't want to do this job or that? Because Mike Rowe was in Michigan up at the Mackinac Policy Conference last year, and I talked to him up there along with Governor Snyder. And one of the things was making these jobs, for lack of a better word, be sexy to people, right?
Right, right.
Where it's like, oh, you know what? These are jobs that can pay and they can be fun and all that. Are you running into those kind of issues?
I mean, of course. You run into those, right? Because you have decades and decades of go to college. And someone says, hey, you know what? Maybe I want to do X, Y, or Z. And the parents might think, well, you know, we didn't go to college and that's what we were really hoping for you. So you kind of have that cultural thing, right?
Right.
But once again, in Michigan, we're a manufacturing state. We're an agricultural state. You know, those things, you look at our grandparents and even my father. My father was the chief engineer on design staff at General Motors. He graduated high school, started working in the drafting shop.
Right.
Right. By the time he left his job, you had to have a master's degree to have his job. So, right. I mean, you know, you look at this and it's you really need to open it up and say, okay, skilled trades are professional trades. It's just different. You know, I went to college. I learned some things and some things I didn't learn. Most things I forgot. But when you go into skilled trades and you're learning to do something, you're doing it every day and you're working with people. And then you're advancing your skills and you're advancing your career.
Aren't we in some ways, though, talking about the return of apprenticeship?
A little bit.
Because for hundreds of years, you learned your job as an apprentice. You didn't learn it through college. You learned it for someone who knew what they were doing. And I feel like there's been this gap in the last 40, 50 years where companies haven't been investing as much in training their own people.
Right.
And it's like, we're going to trust the school to do it. And then the school, it comes back a random assortment of people doing different things.
Well, and to me, that's almost what that step one on the path of the level one help desk job is. Right. I mean, that to me, that is your apprenticeship because, you know, it's like what we said, it's step one. And, you know, while you're there, you're going to be there for a year or two. And during that year or two, you're going to learn what you actually like to do, just like getting that, you know, apprenticeship in the Electricians Guild or, you know, the Pipe Fitters Guild or whatever else. You learn, hey, you know what? I like running lines. I like running conduits. I like running – this is the stuff I'm good at and what I'm – same that, you know, I like troubleshooting PC issues. Mm-hmm. I like network security. I like coding. You know, so okay, that's where you go get your follow-up certs and that's where you start looking to specialize and yeah.
Right, right. One of the things, Germany has a phenomenal apprenticeship program. And in the last few years in Michigan, we do have a couple companies that are starting to work through that kind of apprenticeship. Because that starts when you would graduate high school, you would begin apprenticeship working, learning, and then you come and you have a full time.
I don't think people like it here. I was part of that committee.
I remember that. It was MTAM?
I was part of that committee, and it was 6 months working, 6 months school.
Yep.
You got paid
for
both, and they couldn't get anyone to sign up.
The companies. It was some on the company side. I mean, it's a little bit of a
expensive program. The companies had to invest in the people. And if they didn't know the people, they weren't going to invest in people they think might flake or flip or
right. But when you have something in Germany that's been going on and on and on over time, you know, it's more culturally accepted. But it's definitely something that we're looking at. It's something that we're trying to do here. I mean, being the manufacturing, the base of our state.
I believed in the program. It was a matter of getting the companies to buy into it.
Yeah. And it goes back to college. But now here you are. Okay, let's look at skilled trades. Companies are realizing we really do need these skills. We really need these people. And, you know, maybe that piece of paper from college isn't as a necessity for these jobs that we were thinking. So let's get the people that know what they're doing. Let's get the people that are certified and bring them in. And I think over time what you'll start to see is they realize that these are very valuable resources, very valuable skills to have. And what will eventually happen is maybe those apprenticeship programs will come back. Because companies will say it's worth investing in somebody for 2 years because they're going to come here and they're going to be phenomenal. They're going to work with us and we know them.
Well, I mean, you look at Detroit Labs. I mean, that was their solution to their issue. You know, they couldn't find mobile app devs. So they created an apprenticeship program. And it's a ridiculous interview process to get mm-hmm. through it. But if you get through it, they bring in a class of apprentices. And then it might take you 3 months. It might take you 6 months. And they pay you while you're there doing your thing and learning stuff. And then if you're done and you're good, they hire you.
Right.
Because smart money and smart leaders understand that there's a cost to turning people over and there's a cost to incompetency mm-hmm. as well. And I think there's been a lot of short-sighted look by a lot of companies where they look at a situation, they go, well, I don't know and I don't know if I want to put the money in. But they lose so much when they fail, but they don't – you know, finally they're starting to look at some of that stuff.
Well, the crux of this whole thing and why you're here and why we're here talking about this right. is how many people did we lose? How much IT
in 08-09?
Right. In 08-09, which is the reason why this show is partially successful as it was.
Yeah, the pink slip parties.
Everybody's scattering and then – no, I mean the show.
Oh, yeah. And us like little pockets of you know people that were waiting for us all around the country. Yeah,
right. But I mean you think about that for a second and now it's back and no one's – well, they're starting to come back, right? Right.
Yeah.
And if well, you look I think at, there's a shift.
No, and you look at affordability of living here and you know like I always joked and I'll turn it over to you in a second but – like the guys at HP and Cisco, they would complain about their salaries, and they're from Boston and mm-hmm. the Bay Area, Chicago. And I'm like, man, I live in Detroit. I'm like a king here. You guys don't get it.
Just today on the site, the Barry Gordy Mansion just sold for $1.65 million. Get this. In San Francisco, the median house price for like an average house is $1.5 million.
So in San Francisco,
right. Because for the same price, basically the same price of what you bought one of our historic mansions, you get like a normal house in San Francisco.
And you get 1,200 square feet in Manhattan for that.
And right. property taxes.
No, less than Manhattan, yeah.
Way less than that.
Manhattan.
Less than 1,200 square feet
like
for that?
400 square feet.
Yeah. Oh, for male too?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You get this room. You get this room in the bathroom.
Right.
I mean, 6 years ago, I was in D.C., two-bedroom apartment, two bathrooms downtown, $3,700 a month.
Oh, dude, it killed me. So when I moved out here in March of 96, I dumped my townhouse for $210. Mm-hmm. When I went back in 2006 for 4th of July weekend, it just so happened that that house, that my old house was back on the market again, $1.6 million.
Oh.
Yeah. And then what about in 2009?
Yeah. Talk about wanting to throw myself in front of a metro train. That would
right.
Mm-hmm. Real estate's expensive. And one of the nice things about Michigan is our cost of living is not that high.
You know? No.
And you look at, you know, a little tiny statistic like we have 3,200 miles of coastline in Michigan, where I think the West Coast has something like 1,800 and the East Coast only has like 1,200.
Yeah.
So you're looking at – and those are multiple states. We have one state. We don't have 10,000 lakes. We have something like 12,000 lakes.
Yeah.
So well, low cost of living.
Brian, you did the math with me when we talked about like, this program. We're expecting to at least get – we're in a great day, 200 people through this program,
mm-hmm.
maybe 100. But you did the math on the economic impact that this provides for the city and even just getting basic you know, help desk jobs. You know the math better than I do. What was the impact of like 100 people going through? You told me like it was like $12 million to the state.
I mean, the impact of someone getting a job. So what happens is you have somebody that's either unemployed or underemployed, right? You give them skills. They get certs. They come in. They get a full-time job. Well, now they're employed and they're making money. They're either paying their bills or they're going out on Friday and Saturday night, something they didn't do before.
Right.
So you're generating revenue for another business, which might need to hire another person. So
yep.
you start going down that path. Now you start having, okay, well, I've been here for a year. I've really like doing this, so I'm going to start learning and training some more here. Their salary is going to rise, and you start having that entire impact. And you start throwing 100.
And you've got that next cream of the – next crop coming right up behind them.
Right. So on average, you can look at each person could generate some sort of revenue around the state, about $200,000 to $250,000 roughly. You know, if someone's going to invest about $250,000 into a business, they're probably going to have a additional employee. So you look at every million, you're probably going to have roughly four employees. So when you start looking at 100 people, you know, grant you, they're not the, you know, $50, $60, $70 an hour high consulting jobs, but it's not saying that in 10 or 15 years you're not – you could be up there making some money, doing some pretty phenomenal things.
Well, I mean, just look at it – look at naturally from all the chaos that they, you know, they were talking about with when they were talking about moving Chrysler headquarters out of Auburn Hills, and like all the restaurants that got in an uproar because, you know, they'd have to close down. They rely on those workers. They rely on, you know, the lunch crowd. They rely on this.
Look at what on Updike when they closed the GM factory. Yeah. There was those
when we went to Flint to talk to the class. Yeah. Look, we passed more places that were shuttered than were open.
Yeah,
it was bad.
Yeah,
but like, you know, I live by Updike, and it hasn't come, like, between the Silverdome and that Ford plant.
Yeah,
there was some, like, and you read stories like the old Coney's, like where all the famous Pistons used to go to. They're all closed.
Yeah,
every last one of them.
Yeah. I mean, there's such a cascade effect of, okay, you know, you have 80,000 people working at Company A, you know, General Motors, I think they're 120, 140. But how many jobs does that support at the Tier A? And then you go to the Tier 2s and the Tier 3s.
Yep.
And then you start looking at the restaurants and the shows and, oh, I have to buy a car. You know, I need a house. You start looking at the impact of that single company to what it does for an entire region. I mean, it's the impact runs into the tens of billions of dollars.
And that's why we sit around and bitch about corporate tax breaks.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the ROI on this is orders of magnitude better than buying a stadium for a multi-billionaire.
Right.
Right. But, I mean, at the same time, I mean, it's, you know, they're not everybody's favorite, but you need to attract those businesses in, and you need to bring them here. And eventually, well,
they talked about Foxconn in Wisconsin.
Right.
It would have been a 25-year break even on tax breaks to have it brought there. Now, at that point, when do you just pull the plug and say, nah, we're good?
Well, I mean, what you have, though, is you're employing, I don't know, thousands of people that can actually get a job and go out and do things and provide for their family. So, yeah, maybe the state's not going to get from Foxconn those 25 years of investment, but those 2,000 or 3,000 people they hired, oh, that state's
Oh, no, that's what they were talking – no, that's what they were talking about, is that all in, the ROI doesn't hit until that 25-year mark. That, I mean, that's how crazy and significant everything was.
So that's – I mean, but still, you got – okay, you got 2,000, 3,000 people being able to supply – a living for their families, have some kids, go to college, you know. Yeah, and the state kind of, you know, they take a little bit of that, right? I mean, government is here for the people to help them. But, I mean, in the end, you know, that's what they're doing. They're saying, look, we'll give you a break, but at the same time, we're going to give all these people jobs and help them.
Well, and to be clear, Michigan has been stated from reports that were then retracted from Foxconn that they were actually going to invest in an autonomous R&D facility here.
Right.
And so that's actually something that I know that the governor has been there like talking about and things like
last
that.
Week,
yeah, last week. So that's been a really hot topic around here around that, because there is a lot of money that's being put into that. And what is what is the right role of incentives? The other side to think about that is every other state is playing this game. Mm-hmm. And I think early on in the – this is just my own opinion. But early on in the administration, it was like, well, we're not going to do incentives. And I think now we're realizing if you don't do them – everybody else is doing them.
But they need to be strategic. You just can't flat out say, hey.
Yeah. See, Dave, it's like Matt Stafford. If you don't pay him lines, somebody else will.
Let them.
Agreed.
Oh, so you're telling him to leave the state?
Let him.
All right.
No. Fine.
Not him. I'm talking business.
Oh, no. Stafford. Let him go. Bye.
But, hey, Brian, thank you for hanging out with us. We appreciate the insight. And look forward to an awesome launch of the IT and the Career Academy.
Can't wait to get these people jobs.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Uh-huh.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to hit segment four for once in a while. We got Jeremiah Dr. Hook here from DailyDetroit.com. This is the IT and the D Show.
And we'll be right back.
IT in the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit. One beer at a time.
Hey guys, it's Timog, Bruce Leroy from The Last Dragon. You're listening to the IT and D Show.
ITinTheD.com.
Welcome back. This is the one and only IT and the D Show. broadcasting. I had two margaritas before the show. That's why. Broadcasting live
that
here.
That never works out well for you.
No, it works out great. We did have to do this more often. We don't do this enough. We used to show up every show blotto.
Fushnickened. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is
a cooler dragged behind, actually.
This is this is Dave the sales guy, and that's Bob the Geek. It's Randy the FNG, and that's Nuri the I do
the
Twitters.
The Twitters, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Find
but
us
not
on
does the Randys.
Find us online at itandthed.com. I was gonna say DetroitNet.org.
I think that still redirects.
It does it? I think I still own it. But yeah, we are here at segment four. We haven't done this in a while. Jeremiah, Dr. Hook, you've been hanging out with us. What the heck's going on?
You know. Things, the city, movies, life.
So I guess we got a long topic of stuff to talk about. The movie.
Yeah, the movie everyone's been talking about, at least in this town, Detroit. So did anyone see it?
No.
Good question. Did anyone see it?
Apparently I did. And I was one of the few people. Because it did only did seven – there was a ton of buzz around this flick. Catherine Bigelow – you know, all the stuff. The guy from Star Wars, the one stormtrooper.
Yep. Well, the lead.
John Boyega.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I needed a real name. And 7.3 million opening weekend. This weekend, 3. It got whooped by Despicable Me 3. More people went and – double the people went and saw the Emoji Movie than went and saw Detroit. It was a box
now,
office
hold on.
Flop.
Let me – no, see, I don't call it a box office flop, and I'm going to tell you why. Are you going to see a movie about a story about something that happened in Milwaukee 50 years ago?
Well, there's a few things to talk about this.
No, right? I'm asking a straight-up question because why would there be any sort of – I can understand straight out of Compton.
Why was this not a Netflix thing?
Well, I can understand straight out of Compton because we all listen to the music. I can
right.
understand Motown and Johnny Cash and Ray Charles and all the kind of the documentaries because we're all involved in it. But if you didn't live in Detroit in the 60s, this really it impacts you today, obviously, because you know we talk about the long-lasting effects of it. And if you live in Detroit. But if you live in Chicago, Cleveland, Rust Belt, Texas.
So was the marketing wrong?
You could care less about well, the, yes.
But here's the thing. Not a lot of other riots that have happened in the country, the Watts riot, the LA riots,
Newark.
They didn't call in the U.S. Army to handle the problem.
But that
who knows
happened
about that, though? Nobody, not that many people know about
50
it.
50 years ago.
Right.
50 years ago, they called in the U.S. Army
but
in Detroit.
That's 50 years ago. That's not exactly stream of consciousness pop culture.
Right.
Who's seeing movies? Sub-30-year-olds. Right.
Well, and also there is an argument to be made that a lot of people are just watching them at home, you know.
Right.
So you've got to have something to bring them to a movie theater.
You know how hard
you
it is
to make it like Wonder Woman or something that's as got an extra factor.
No, you know how hard it is to get me in the movie theater as a 40-year-old man. Like it's hard to get me to the movie theater.
You know they have alcohol there, Bob. Right.
I don't like having alcohol because then I got to get up and pee.
Right.
No, but
I can't hit pause, and I got to
right.
deal other people.
Right. Right.
Bob just brings one of those jugs.
I can't yell at the screen.
Oh. Well, you can.
Stadium pal?
Yes. Yeah,
no, I don't have it. That's gross. But no, I don't think it doesn't have the emotional connection it does right here.
Yeah, and I felt a large emotional connection to the movie, although there are
I was amazed this
it.
Was a national release. I was shocked. I thought this was a released at like –
like an art film release
yeah.
kind of thing, yeah.
Like I was shocked this was a national release.
You know what was really solid was 12th and Claremont. And I think the way that they put together that short film,
yes.
I think may have actually been more interesting to a general audience. Because I mean, when you get into this, a lot of people, the feedback has been crazy about how a lot of people just felt it was over the top. Like Detroit was over the top and too far. And even
it's like over the top. Like, so for those who haven't seen it and like me probably aren't going to see it until it hits a movie channel at some point, what's the scoop?
Basically, it's a really raw look into police brutality.
Mm. It's a story of the Algiers Motel on Woodward,
yeah.
Which essentially they believe there was sniper fire coming out of the hotel. It ended up being a starter pistol that somebody was firing off in the area, and they pulled a few people into a room and they literally executed them.
So now you
and
would.
And the cops got off without any criminal prosecution.
Right. So I have not gathered that from any of the commercials
or
the marketing or any of that stuff. And you would think with all of the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, and all the conversations that are going on around that, that should have been a huge marketing point for them. And it probably would have got – there's your national hook that it doesn't have otherwise.
Right. Because, I mean, some of the movie posters, although they're beautiful downtown, don't even say the Detroit movie on it. They just say Algiers Motel. Mm-hmm. You know? So I wonder
– which I wouldn't even know
right.
that
and
that's a
I'm
thing.
A history buff, so I know. But if I'm the only person who knows it, you have a problem.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, I read Detroit history books for funsies.
Nerd.
Total nerd. The only person who reads more – I think the only
an
person
IT
who reads
show.
A different kind of nerd. The only person who reads more history books than me, I think, I'm sure, is Dan Austin of historicdetroit.org.
Or Calvin.
Right.
No, Dan's got Austin Calvin beat, I think.
We had people at our podcaster meetup that were playing Pokemon Go. So
guilty. Recently?
People still
Thursday.
Play that?
See, I only read Purple Gang books. I'm fascinated by Prohibition.
There is a really good
Detroit.
Book coming out. Really good. It's promised to be a really good book. The Witch of Del Rey, about this person who got framed for murder in the Del Rey neighborhood, and like the mobs involved and all kinds of stuff. Really would be up your alley.
I just want to make enough money so I can buy Chris Weber's old house that has the pipeline going to
the tunnel out to the island. Yeah.
my great grandfather actually ran booze from Canada for the Purple Gang, and literally take a boat underneath into the sewer in Detroit, upload the. Upload.
You are on an IT
show.
Booze,
yeah. Upload the booze up through the sewers into the I think it was the one bar that the Purple Gang used to hang out right off of Jefferson.
That's crazy.
Behind Kobo, yeah.
Oh yeah, the what's now Tommy's?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And they just uncovered some last year, some of the old tunnels and things mm-hmm. that they had in there.
Yeah. Well, they had some great stuff on the east side over by Harbor Island. They actually had like an engine powered chain that they would actually pull the booze underneath the river from Canada. Right over there, it's near the Gross Point.
See, this
border.
Is what happens when you government too much. This stuff happens. Right. Well, an entire infrastructure was built.
Something like 80% of the booze that came into the United States
was through Detroit.
Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well known. Oh, yeah.
All the booze that Capone had came from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Go Detroit.
As you know, Detroit's been a shipping hub for years.
Yes.
So it's always been networking Detroit one beer at a time.
See?
At one point, Detroit had one saloon for every 13 residents.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, that's an interesting take, guys, because I think a lot of people don't really know what's going on with the movie or didn't. Because I thought it was there are fundamental issues that lots of think pieces on the internet have gone into around the movie. But I think the problem is that nobody's even seeing it to discuss it. That's an anemic.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, if I have – like I knew the Star Wars guy was in it and that's it. Like that's literally all I knew about the movie.
And I knew about that when they had the thing after the movie was already out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like I had no idea. I knew more about the Detroiters casting than I did about this movie.
I think part of the marketing push of that movie was to keep it very, very quiet until they launched the movie. I think that was – if I'm not mistaken, that was part
that's
of their like
– phenomenal –
not
marketing.
Yeah. Well,
let's not tell anyone about it.
Yeah. Until the last minute.
Right.
And then also the timing. These kind of serious films definitely do better later in the year than summertime. And I think they're trying to
– we want happy movies.
Right. Well, you're looking for the summer blockbuster. You're looking for the – yeah.
They wanted to sync it with the anniversary, but that anniversary doesn't mean anything to anybody who didn't live through it.
Right. Yeah. Which, again,
right.
You
50 years ago.
It means something, but I mean it could have been the same year. You could have just said we're releasing it in October.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would have cared.
So, I mean, going through the whole Detroit thing, we talked a little bit about there's some, you know, all these bars and all these things that are popping up, and there's some that can't hack anymore, which is interesting to me because
Circa's
you think
– gone?
Well, you know, I mean, Circa – see, that one bothers me. That was my Wayne State hang.
Yeah, that was your – that was your Nancy's.
That was my Nancy's. I mean, pretty much after every class, we went there and drank a lot.
that explains why it took you 5 years to every class.
No, not every class. When I went to Wayne, but I mean, no, probably they went out of business because I left Wayne.
Right.
And I haven't
Go
been back.
Go back to school, Bob.
Now, yeah, exactly. If I went to grad.
Go back for my master's.
Right. Like, there's. But like the awning was awful. The place looked, you know,
it was. It really started to show its age. I mean, I think my dad used to drink there.
The days of
and they just didn't do anything to like.
If you don't update your bar in this day and age every 10 years, you're going to die, and I'm not going to feel sorry for you.
And you can update it in a way that keeps it classic, but you got to keep it in a certain way. You know what I mean? Like, we're talking – like, Nancy's a place that some of the events go to. It's been around since 1912. If they ever take out that ceiling, somebody's going to get killed because it's beautiful. Right? Yeah. But they did update it. You know what I mean? They've taken little things in, you know, the patio and stuff like that.
They need
scrub the floor.
Yeah. Scrub the floor. That's an important piece.
Keep the phone booth.
Yes.
But, like, the Midtown places that are closing, that's interesting because those are the first ones that came back was the Midtown places. If you look at when Detroit started the kind of the move to, like, the new buildings, the new renovations, the new –
Yeoman's work that Sue Mosey has done with billions of dollars of investment.
But like all those places started.
It took her 30 years.
Right. But all those places started Midtown. Now you're seeing the kind of the, I don't want to say the crappy ones, but like I think the bad ones are leaving.
Well, even though it's bad ones, but it's also market changes, right? So the latest news was that the Detroit Pizza Company was gone, right? And that's a place that served 89 cents.
The Detroit Blank Company.
Right. The Detroit Dick Company.
We have the Detroit Podcast Company.
65. I have identified 65 Detroit Blank Companies.
Did you register Detroit Podcast Company?
You're goddamn right I did.
You son of a bitch.
We need a very sleek shirt.
Detroit insert here company, like shirts.
.com. Yeah.
Right.
.com.org.net.
Right.
But that place.
What was the Detroit Pizza Company, though? Because so
it had definitely a following, but it was like 89 cent pizza slices and five.
But what was the name of it?
It's Detroit Pizza Company.
Okay. But Detroit Blank Company.
All right.
The thing is that at one time you would think, oh, college area, Wayne State, cheap pizza makes perfect sense, right?
Absolutely.
But the building it's in now has just sold condos for $329,000 each.
Jesus.
And they have HOA fees of like $820 plus a month.
$820?
What are they doing for $820 bucks a month for me? What are they doing?
Security, water, maybe.
HJs.
You get to live in Detroit,
and he's not
man.
Talking about Honest John's.
I mean, but I mean, you got to look at that happening in Royal Oak. I mean, Royal Oak was a very eclectic place.
And we broke
bars and restaurants started moving in. Now they're in Ferndale.
Yep.
Ferndale used to be an eclectic place. Bars and restaurants moved in. Now those businesses have moved out. Well, no different in Detroit.
It's somewhat – but in the city of Detroit, it's interesting because the numbers are just getting so crazy. I mean, I have friends who live in downtown Ferndale, and they've been doing well for themselves. But in Midtown, it's gone from 100,000 to 329 in like – a year or two.
We've been watching those condos across from Little Caesars Arena since the day they opened to the day the market crashed till today. And I just had drinks.
At one point, those things were selling for $99,000.
Yeah.
Some of them were in the 70s.
They opened at 2. 70. They opened at 2, went up to 250, dropped down to 70, 80, 90. Yep. And now they're back up like to like 3 or 4 now.
Yeah.
And they're not well built.
No.
That was obvious. Right.
Or whatever.
It's kind of crazy. Well, like I know a guy in my neighborhood just listed his house for sale for $489.
And you're in University District.
For $489.
Like, yep.
It blows my mind. And I bought mine for $325 a year ago, and it's $150,000 in a year.
I know three different people with appreciations north of $70,000 in 12 months.
That's ridiculous.
My house went up $110,000 in Auburn Hills in 12 months.
Dude, it's nuts.
But I was so far underwater. Where now I'm finally above water, so I'm not bragging about it. I'm just saying.
Eminem selling his house for less than half out in Rochester.
He bought it for $4.5 million. He's selling it for $2 million.
Yeah.
And I don't get why he's selling that for $2 million, because if you look around what's going on, like that's a bargain.
I don't know. That house looks straight out of McMansionHell.com.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Is that a website?
Yeah.
But, you know, Detroit, I mean, Detroit has – it's going to – if they're not careful, it's going to have the same problem Saturn had, okay? Saturn was a phenomenal car company. They built these cars. It was all about the customer experience. But once you got out of that car and you had a family and you wanted another car, you went back to Saturn and said, oh, you don't have one. Now I have to go to Toyota or I have to go to Honda.
Nailed it.
Right?
Nailed it.
Detroit's the same way. It's great. Everybody's moving into downtown. It's phenomenal. It's wonderful.
They're young.
They have
they're
a
single,
kid and they're going to
cool.
look around and go, okay, time to get out of the suburbs.
Unless you can't send your kids to Leggett.
Like Gross Point, yeah,
Gross Point Lake. Yeah, that's you know, Tulio's alma mater.
DeLaSalle, any of those. I mean, like, you can't.
That's 25 grand a year. Cranbrook's 28 grand a year.
Mm-hmm. But I think that the type of folks, like, so there's a lot of out-of-town money flowing into the city right now. And what's happening is a lot of those folks, that isn't a concern for them. For them, it's, I sold my place in Brooklyn for $3 million that was, like, you know, the size of the studio times two. And now they're coming to Detroit and
bought a couple houses.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
I mean, what, that's maybe 2-3% of the total population.
No. Half my neighbors are from out of town, dude. I live right near the DIA.
Just like Dave sold his town, would have sold his townhouse for 1.6. Come here for 600 grand. You got a block.
Yeah.
No, and you're like, I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, Midtown. So in the last year, meeting neighbors, unless it's either people who have, there's three types of neighbors I have. People who have been there for like decades and decades. And then you've got your like transient college students who money's no object to them because it's four to a house and they're med students.
Thanks, right. Dad.
And then you've got a bunch of people moving in that like New York, San Francisco, Texas. Every you know you, when I go to the bars, it's no long. It is definitely changing, and it's that out of town thing, especially in Midtown.
Can we finally put the new Detroit versus old Detroit to bed? Can we finally?
We've been talking about this for 100 years.
You know
years.
What, Bob? I think we can. Let me tell you why.
Please, I've been
hiking.
Preach, Brian.
I've been hugging like for 20 years, and I go out on the trail, and I for the last 17 years. Where are you from? Detroit. Oh, and they take a step back. 2-3 years ago now, went out, told somebody I was from Detroit, and I literally heard this. Really? I can't wait to go there. I hear things are happening there, and I'm like, no. I said Detroit, Michigan. Yeah. That place, I can't wait to go visit. That's what I've been hearing now.
We got fart face my entire life, and then out 2 years ago, this changed, and now we're not allowed to talk about Detroit to Detroit.
Right.
Like, that's what gets me the most. It's like, you can't call it Podcast Detroit. You're in Royal Oak. Like,
dude, I remember. That's been going on for years.
Right. But it's any other city, too.
No.
New York?
No.
New York doesn't care.
You live down on Long Island somewhere. Oh, you're not in Manhattan.
But you're still New York.
You're still New York.
You know, the state's got the same name as the city. You don't wherever hear, you are, you're in New York.
Yeah. Well, you're still New York City, but like you don't hear, oh, you're from Schaumburg. Oh, you're not Chicago enough.
That doesn't exist.
Yeah, go to Island Chicago Park. And ask them what if they have 312 day. Watch yourself get laughed out of the bar.
I got laughed out of Cisco offices for asking.
Well, it does happen in Chicago, though.
I was on 312 in Chicago, and I go, you guys parading today? They go, what are you talking about? They go, Chicago Day, 312. They go, you are such an idiot, Bob. like, where are you from? Blue. Like, that was the thing. Like, I really want to write this blog. Said, yes, I'm from Detroit, because growing up, it was always this. Where are you from? Michigan. What part? I live in Warren. Where's that? Just north of Detroit. And it became a shortcut. Detroit. Where are you from? I'm from Detroit. And then you get the fart smell face.
Yep.
And you get the, you got to have a gun on you. But I'm like, damn, like, no, I'm from Detroit. And I started becoming, like, angry proud. Like, this is my dirty pair of jeans. I don't, like, and I'm from Detroit.
But there was also a period when people would say, where are you from? And you'd say, well, I'm from north of Detroit.
I never said that.
I heard a lot of people saying that over the years in the late 70s, early 80s. Yeah. There was a lot of that.
Detroit, but then like now I'm like, where are you from? Auburn Hills. Where's that? About 20 minutes north of Detroit.
Yeah,
like,
what mile road?
Right. Mile road.
Right.
Like, it's like Jersey. What exit?
Right. But it went from I lived my entire life getting fart smell face to now it's finally cool and now I'm not allowed to say it. And you know what? Kiss my ass. Yeah. I'm saying it. Like, period.
Yeah, nothing's changed on my end. Thanks.
No. And the problem is then I got to go my resume. Oh, I went to a shelter when I was 15. I went to Wayne State. And I've been going down.
Yeah, I'm not looking to prove my cred to you. We're good.
Right. I got
to,
like, cred. And you just moved here 2 years ago from Lake Orion. Now you own the city?
Yeah.
Kiss my ass. You know who you are.
He says as he looks at Jared. Bob,
I've only been living in this city for
Bob 18 is not
years.
A millennial, if you don't know.
No! Right. No. But no, this is my city till I die. And, I'll be damned if I say I can't say it now.
Well, the more we
because
can
say why?
It, Bob. Say it loud and proud, baby.
You know what? Guess what? I'm from Detroit. Mark that down and put it in the intro. I am from Detroit. I'm going to say it again.
I'm trying to see if I had somewhere in here. I have the old I love this city.
I do.
Oh, yeah. And that was from back in the Russell days.
I do, though.
I almost re-edited that I Love This City drop to Put Your Hands Up for Detroit. Right. I love this city, but drop your voice in there.
You should. You should.
So what else you got going on?
Well, there's a lot of stuff happening. The Daily Detroit Happy Hour is doing very well on the Podcast Detroit Network. Yeah. Had a really great guest. We've actually been to the new studio twice.
Right.
One for a great roundtable panel that is going up tomorrow on the Daily Detroit Happy Hour, where actually Dave and Sven and a few other folks talked about the future of media. And then we also had Eric Larson, head of the Downtown Detroit Partnership, who is that guy.
Eric. I like Eric.
Yeah, yeah. It was a great interview, more than an hour long. We went really long for us.
And I have to give
it's been our most popular episode.
And I have to give you credit. You guys do a really good job on that podcast.
Thank you.
It's well thought out. It's well done.
Sound quality is really good.
Sound quality is amazing. Well, and thanks, Sven, for that. I mean, there's a part of it that's me, but Sven is the engine behind all of that. You know, people forget, like, he's a former Associated Press reporter. He does his homework.
Oh, that came out during the media discussion. That absolutely came out.
Yes, that did.
Oh, no. He got defensive.
Yes, he did.
Oh, I'll eat him up for lunch. What did he get defensive about?
I started smacking around the crap state of media today.
Oh,
and he got defensive.
It's true.
Well, but yeah, but it's well, and once like we had the whole well, no, it's because of the it's not the reporters that are the issue. The guys that have they're getting laid off. It's the businesses that are like, no, you will be click monkeys. That's the issue. But yeah,
I can't say my opinion anymore because you guys will put a video on and then you'll make it go viral. Then you'll make websites.
I did not make the video. That would be Tom Lawrence, Lawrence Systems.
Right. And then Dave did the .com and pointed at that.
But hasn't told anybody about that. Like it's not out there.
You know, it's funny, you read it on yourself.
No, the whole thing about that whole thing, and I got mad about it, and the whole slowrollsucks.com thing.
See?
No. You know, I didn't get one piece of anything. Like no one said anything bad to me. Not once.
No.
Did anyone?
Because a lot of the comments were agreeing with you.
and I thought, no, because I figured you guys threw me under the bus for ranting on it. And no one said, like, screw that guy. Like,
there was one screw that guy, but screw that guy.
But, like, not as bad as when you wrote that blog.
True. You didn't wind up on Flashpoint.
Yeah. No.
That was good, though.
And I stand behind everything I said.
No, it was
And
accurate.
I wish I would have said more.
Well, and that's why it wasn't throwing me under the bus. It was a good video that is an opinion that people agree with.
I know, but
it
felt like I was getting thrown under the bus.
You weren't getting thrown
under the bus. No, you weren't getting thrown under the bus.
And I stand behind every word I said.
You should.
Slow roll, you suck.
To be clear, I go to slow roll every other week. But
stop with the red lights. And I love you. I think you're amazing. I think you're – And no, it's not the same as going to Tiger Game, Benji, because I don't go down with 3,000 of my cars and my friends and stop at the red lights and not stop at the red lights and go to the game.
Well, it goes into that like nuance of opinion, right? And so that's one of the great things.
That's not opinion. Stop at the red lights.
It's one of the great things podcasts can do, and that's what. We had Emily bringing a PR perspective, and then we had a guy from Detroit Public Television. And part of it is the business model has to support nuance. And in a podcast, we can do these kind of things, whereas a lot of times on just the regular web, text web, whatever you want to say, it's like, well, I got it. It's so devalued that it's like click, click, click. So there's got to be a change in things. And that's why we're doing podcasting.
You go ahead and run a story about the Red Wings logo being corrupted by people in Charlottesville to get all the clickety clicks.
Don't give them any pub. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Most people.
That's one of the, okay. Sorry. Hey, I had three in the opening. You got one at the close. We're good.
I have zero compunction about throwing Nazis under the bus for any reason.
Then we'll throw under the bus. Yeah, then we'll throw under the bus.
I'm glad with that any day. I'll do it any day of the week.
And Jarrett, hats off. We found out you're number three. So this is like a UHF moment. Like, what, are we actually showing up in the ratings? No. Like, you're number three.
Yeah, basically, something like that, yeah.
Like, so, like, for as far as traffic, as far as exposure, as far as, like, you're number three in town.
For, like, for online outlet, yeah. I mean, there's other groups, you throw in your TV, you throw in, but online only, yeah.
You can't, we're not putting you in the same kit. Yeah, it's different.
Yeah, yeah.
But cheers and hats off to you. This is a
thank you.
It's been a lot of work. I remember when you asked me, should I spend the whatever money it was to get DailyDetroit.com? I go, that's a great name, and you spent it, and you've busted your ass, and you put a great product out there, and hats off to you. And I not envious of your success because we're doing better than you. I'm just kidding.
Why do you think I have a show? Two shows.
Speaking of
two shows.
Austin would like you to know that he's never loved you more than he does right now.
What did I do?
Austin from MotorCityGeek.com.
Austin, I have a pew pew shirt for Bob, by the way. You gotta tell him. It's sitting in my closet. I just haven't seen you guys. But no, seriously, cheers to you, and we wish you nothing but continued success. And
thank you.
We love the product you're putting on, and keep doing what you're doing. Yeah. You. Cheers. So, hey, are we going to wrap things up? We're going to wrap things up.
Yeah, we should.
Episode 209 of the IT and the D Show. I'd like to thank our guests, Kasten Thomas from Interworks Technologies and nomorerandom.org. Thank you for spreading the word on that. We appreciate it.
That's cool stuff.
Thank you to Brian Krantz from from Pure Michigan MEDC. Thanks to Jeremiah Dr. Hook from DailyDetroit.com. Also like to thank our sponsor, Eero, for keeping the lights on. We greatly appreciate it, and we love your product. On behalf of Bob the Sales Guy, Dave the Geek, Nuri the F&G, and Randy, I do the Twitters. We'd like to remind you to drink up your drinks. Get your phone numbers. You don't got to go home. You just got to get the hell out of here. See you next week. Drive careful. Beat it.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
Long live Flash! You've saved your ass. Have a nice day.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Murphy.
Ain't the run. The run.
Game over, man. It's game over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
Nothing is over! You just don't turn it off.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to, so.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill. You need to cool that shit out. And that's the double truth, Ruth.
Bob loves it in the camp.
I hope this was as much fun for you as it was for me.
That's why I like it in the camp.
Fear me.
My job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
Shut up, Mimsy. Shut up, Mimsy. Shut up, Mimsy.
Why would, like, Buick put their cars next to, like, the Bentleys? Like, why is this not marketing?
The alphabet.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, I can't take that position.
That analogy sucks because it's right.
Because you're getting your 8-track tuned up.
Are we at a break yet? Yeah, so now I'm just, like, doing, like, stupid stuff to make me laugh.
Venture capital is not the end game.
When are we going to talk about me?
Jane, you ignorant slut.
It's my show. I can say what I want.
Yeah. Kiss my ass, go home, unplug, get off the goddamn internet. You are everything that is wrong with the internet right now.
You're so white right now.
I'm the whitest guy in the room. Just explain it to me.
I love this city. I was banging on the way.
Really? Should we talk about the tag team? Should I keep going or should I stop?
Can I just say, it's been great being on a show that talks about Mickey Rooney dying for 20 seconds and then poop for 10 minutes.